ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் லேர்னிங் மிஸ்டேக்ஸ், ப்ரீஜுடிஸ் ஃப்ரீ, பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Good morning, everyone. Today's talk is another in the series for Mauritius. As we mentioned, we're developing a series of 12 talks for use in Mauritius in two ways. One is at the first Sunday of the month, Homa, there at the spiritual park. They have around 300 or 400 people coming every month. Part of it is to give a talk in Creole, so to use there. And then secondly, Dr. Pillai of Vanakkam, which is a religious monthly newspaper, has offered to give us a full page, which is very generous of him. So this is part of the page, and we'll go up to some 5,000 circulation there and get distributed in that way as well. So this one is a talk we've given a number of times. Learning from our mistakes. Since September 11th, there have been increased statements by Western leaders condemning some men as being evil and extolling others as being good. This, of course, is not the Hindu perspective. But since we hear these statements so often, it is good to take time to reflect on the Hindu point of view regarding good and evil, to make sure our and our children's thinking on the matter remains uninfluenced by Western philosophical thought regarding the nature of man. The Hindu viewpoint is that all of mankind is good, as we are all divine beings, souls created by God. In fact, we are all one family, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. The whole world is one family. Each soul is emanated from God as a spark from a fire and begins a spiritual journey which eventually leads back to God. All human beings are on this journey, whether they realize it or not, and of course, the journey spans many lives. If all are on the same journey, why then is there such a disparity between men? Clearly, some act like saints, and others act like sinners. Some take delight in helping their fellow man, while others take delight in harming him. The Hindu explanation is that each of us started the journey at a different time, and thus there some are at the beginning of the spiritual path and are young souls, while others are near the end and are old souls. Our Paramaguru, Jnanaguru Siva Yoga Swami, in speaking to his devotees, would describe life as a school, with some in the MA class and others in kindergarten, and that he gave to each according to his advancement. Man's nature, as we know, can be described as threefold: spiritual, intellectual, and instinctive. It is the instinctive nature, the animal-like nature, which contains the tendencies to harm others. Men who are expressing these tendencies are young souls who need to learn to harness this force. Thus, the Hindu approach to such a man is not to label him evil, but rather to focus on helping him learn to control these instincts and improve his behavior. Gurudeva describes this in an insightful way. People act in evil ways who are not yet in touch with their soul nature and live totally in the outer, instinctive nature. What the ignorant see as evil, the enlightened see as the actions of low-minded and immature individuals. End of quote. Important insights into the soul's maturing process can be gained by looking at the three Shaktis of God Shiva. Ichcha, the power of desire, Kriya, the power of action, and Jnana, the power of wisdom, which are also the three powers of the soul. We first have a desire. When the desire becomes strong enough, we act. In young souls, the action may be ill-conceived and adharmic. For example, we want a computer, so we simply steal one. Money is needed, so we rob a bank. The soul is repeating a cycle of similar experiences, moving back and forth from desire to action, desire to action. In the case of the adharmic action of stealing, eventually the soul will learn the lesson that it is not the best course of action to take to acquire possessions. This learning is the Jnana Shakti, wisdom coming in and causing one's behavior to improve. This process also works for dharmic actions as well. We are helping out as a volunteer at the temple and teaching children's classes once a month. We like the feeling it gives us of helping others in a meaningful way and decide to help out every week. Therefore, the Jnana is to decide to do even more of it and thus feel more joyful. We have again improved our behavior. For all of mankind, no matter where one is on the spiritual path, spiritual advancement comes from improving one's behavior. Said another way, it comes from learning from one's mistakes. Unfortunately, this process is often inhibited by the idea that somehow we are not supposed to make mistakes. We grow up being scolded by our mistakes by our parents. We grow up being scolded for our mistakes by our parents. Some teachers ridicule students when they make mistakes. No wonder many adults feel terrible when they make a mistake. Therefore, to spiritually benefit our mistakes, we need a new attitude toward them. Gurudeva described mistakes as wonderful opportunities to learn. Those who are parents can teach their children that making mistakes is not bad. It is natural and simply shows we do not understand something. Mistakes are wonderful opportunities to learn. The story I give to try and impress the point is of a young family. The wife is at home taking care of the 5-year-old, and the 5-year-old makes some horrendous mistake and almost burns down the house. So the wife calls her husband and says, "You will be so happy to hear this news. Our son almost burned the house down. Isn't this wonderful? He is such a great opportunity to learn such an important lesson. And I wanted you to think about it on your way home. What lesson do we need to teach him so he does not make this mistake again?" Of course, you all get the point, which is that unfortunately most parents don't think this way. Usually it is just a question of punishment. But punishment misses the point if it does not go along with the teaching so that you are helping the child learn how not to repeat the mistake. Quite often punishment is all that happens, but the important point is the child does not know something. Otherwise, he never would have made the mistake in the first place. There is some knowledge the child is missing, and the parents need to figure out what that knowledge is. It is fine to punish the child in a reasonable way, but it has to be done without emotion and coupled with trying to help the child not repeat the mistake through figuring out what the child needs to learn. Of course, whose responsibility is it to teach the child? It is the parent's responsibility. The child made a mistake because the parents didn't teach the child about something. That is the point. Moving on, we have four reactions to making a mistake. A common first reaction to having made a mistake is to become upset that we made the mistake, get emotional about it, or if it is a serious mistake, to become quite burdened and even depressed. That is a natural first reaction, but if it is our only reaction, it is not enough. We need to deal with the emotional reaction through the action and move on to the learning stage. Thus, a good second reaction to a mistake is to think clearly about what happened and why the mistake occurred and find a way to not repeat the mistake in the future. Perhaps we were not being careful enough, and resolving to be more careful next time will prevent the problem from reoccurring. Perhaps we did not know something, and now we have that knowledge and can simply resolve to use that knowledge next time. Perhaps we created unintended consequences that caused significant problems to us or others. Now that we are aware of the consequences, we certainly won't repeat the action. Those who are striving to live a spiritual life are self-reflective and learn quickly from their mistakes. In fact, one way to tell a young soul from an old soul is to observe how quickly he learns not to repeat the same mistake. Quite often I get an email in from someone who made a mistake and they are saying, "Oh, I should not have done this." Of course, this is just getting stuck at the first level of reaction. "I should have not done this, I am sorry." But I encourage them to move on to the second level, and instead of saying, "I should not have done this," to say, "I should not do it again." That is the point we are striving for. Not to simply feel sorry that we made a mistake, but to commit to not making it again, or at least trying not to make it again. Taking that step is being self-reflective, and it is how we progress on the spiritual path, because the spiritual path is a series of experiences, and sometimes those experiences involve making mistakes. If we can learn from those mistakes, and we learn to not make them again, then we progress. If we are constantly making the same mistakes over and over and over again, we are not progressing. So there is nothing wrong with making the mistake. We don't want to simply say, "I should not have made the mistake." We want to move on to the point where we say, "I should not make the same mistake again." A third reaction to having made a mistake may be needed if the mistake involved other people. Perhaps we have hurt their feelings or created a strain between us. A direct apology can fix this if we know the other person well. However, in many situations, we are not close enough to the individual to be able to apologize. In that case, a generous act toward the person can adjust the flow of feelings back into a harmonious condition. For example, hold a small dinner party and include them among the guests. A fourth reaction may be needed if the mistake is a major misdeed. For example, if we did something that was dishonest. In this case, even though we have resolved to not repeat the misdeed, apologize to those involved, we may well still feel bad about having done it. In this case, we need to perform some form of penance, prayaschitta, to rid ourselves of the sense of feeling bad about ourselves. Typical forms of penance are to fast, perform 108 prostrations before the deity, or walking prostrations up a sacred path or around a temple. In conclusion, whether a man's actions are evil or good, he is a divine being, a soul created by God. Let the focus not be on categorizing men as good or evil, but on encouraging all to improve their behavior. Learn from their mistakes and move forward on the spiritual path that returns us to God. And each of these talks gives something to do at the end. You're supposed to go home from the spiritual park, do something that week. So, this week, look for one significant mistake you made in the last few years that you have not yet thought about how to avoid repeating. Through applying new knowledge or new understanding, or identifying unintentional consequences that were created, figure out how you can avoid making the same mistake again. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We're continuing this morning on our series for Mauritius. As you know, we have an opportunity to put a page into the religious magazine Vanakkam, thanks to Dr. Pillai, page each month. And we're also going to have the same talk given at the Dharmasala on the first Sunday of the month there, when they have a Homa ceremony. And have some 300 to 400 people coming in attendance there. So this is a talk you've heard before with a few updates. It's a talk on Hindu tolerance, and changed it a little bit more to focus on being practical. So the title is Prejudice-Free Consciousness. Conditions in the world today are certainly troubling, with wars between countries, wars within countries, and a serious threat of international terrorist attacks. The terrorist attacks in New York on September 11th naturally heightened everyone's concern about these problems. One of the immediate consequences of the 9/11 attacks was the presence of television coverage depicting people in a number of countries who strongly hate the United States, some to the point of wishing violence upon it. Watching these shocking reports on television, we were quite impressed by the extent and seriousness of the problem of prejudice in the world today. Attitudes of prejudice toward those who are of a different race, nation, or religion can start simply as distrust, which can then deepen into dislike and further deepen into hatred, which can turn into a desire to inflict injury. Are we born with these attitudes? Certainly not. We are taught them at home, at school, and even in some religious institutions. Soon after the United States went to war with Iraq, a number of governments passed resolutions objecting to the war. Also, some individuals expressed their objection to the war by demonstrating in the streets. These actions are sincere and make a point, but they certainly do not address the core of the problem, which is hatred. People have been raised to hate those of different ethnic groups, religions, or nations. The solution, though a long-term one, is that we need, in the century ahead, to teach all children tolerance, openness to different ways of life, different beliefs, different customs of dress and language. We need to stop teaching them to fear those who are different from themselves. Stop teaching them hatred for peoples of other colors and other religions. Stop teaching them to see the world as a field of conflict. And instead, instill in them an informed appreciation and a joyous reverence for the grand diversity we find around us. Instead of teaching children to be intolerant and to dislike and distrust, hate and inflict injury on those who are different, We can teach them instead to be tolerant and like and trust
befriend, and help. And of course, the central place for this to occur is in the home. Secondarily, it can be further strengthened by also being taught at the temple and at school and through special community activities. Gurudeva stressed in many of his talks and writings that it is in the home that we have the greatest opportunities to change the world for the better. This is because it is the qualities parents instill in their children that create the world of the future. Therefore, the most effective form of protest to the violence in our modern world is to give more thought to what our children are learning as they grow up. And in this regard, every father and mother is indeed a guru. In fact, an individual's first guru, teaching by example, explanation, giving advice, and direction. The quality we wish parents to develop in the child is a prejudice-free consciousness, possessing an open-mindedness that readily embraces differences in ethnic background, religion, and nationality. How can parents nurture a prejudice-free consciousness? What specific actions are effective in raising children to be tolerant rather than to be hateful? As we previously mentioned, we are not born with prejudices. They are all learned at home, at school, and elsewhere. This gives us a good overview, then, on how to nurture a prejudice-free consciousness, which is by carefully monitoring what children hear at home, school, and elsewhere that expresses prejudice. Most importantly, tolerance is nurtured through the complete avoidance of remarks in the home that are racially, religiously, or nationality prejudiced. Also important is discussing with our children any prejudice they hear from others at school and elsewhere and correcting it. We should teach children to avoid generalizations about people and instead to think about specific individuals and the qualities they have. We should teach children to avoid generalizations. Even positive generalizations should be avoided, as they encourage us not to look at the qualities of individuals. Television and movies can provide useful situations to discuss. Tolerance can be developed through having our children meet, interact, and learn to feel comfortable with children of other ethnicities and religions. Hindu organizations can be proactive in this regard and arrange such activities for the children or their members to participate in. Let's look next at the Hindu beliefs that are the basis for Hindu tolerance. First belief is on the nature of God, which is the basis for Hindu tolerance of other religions. Hinduism has four major divisions or denominations: Saivism, Saktism, Smartism, and Vaishnavism. Each calls the Supreme Being by a different name. To Saivites, the Supreme is called Shiva. Shaktis refer to the Supreme as Shakti. Smart is called the Supreme Being Brahman. And to Vaishnavas, he is Vishnu. However, the important point is that each Hindu is worshipping the same Supreme Being. The name is different. The tradition is different. But it is the same Supreme Being that is being worshipped by all Hindus. There is an ancient verse from the Rig Veda that is often quoted in this regard. Truth is one, sages express it variously. This same statement from the Rig Veda can be expanded beyond Hinduism to include all the world religions. There is only one Supreme Being, and all the world's religions are in truth worshipping the same Supreme Being. Gurudeva's statement in this regard is, Saivites profoundly know that God Shiva is the same Supreme Being in whom peoples of all faiths find solace, peace, and liberation. Hindus also believe that there is no exclusive path, no one way for all. Religious beliefs are manifold and different. Hindus, understanding the strength of this diversity, wholeheartedly respect and encourage all who believe in God and do not seek to interfere with anyone's faith or practice. Since the inner intent of all religions is to bind man back to God, Hindus honor the fact that truth is one, as are many. Nonetheless, Hindus realize that all religions are not the same. Each has its unique beliefs, practices, goals, and paths of attainment. And the doctrines of one often conflict with those of another. Even this should never be cause for religious tension or intolerance. The Hindu belief that gives rise to tolerance of differences in race and nationality is that all of mankind is good. We are all divine beings, souls created by God. Hindus do not accept the concept that some individuals are evil and others are good. Hindus believe that each individual is a soul, a divine being, who is inherently good. The Upanishads tell us that each soul is emanated from God as a spark from a fire and begins its spiritual journey which eventually leads back to God. All human beings are on this journey, whether they realize it or not. The Upanishad Mahavakyam that expresses this is, the soul is God. The Hindu practice of greeting one another with namaskar, or worshipping God within the other person, is a way this great philosophical truth is practiced on a daily basis. This idea is taken one step further in the Vedic verse, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, the whole world is one family. Everyone is family-oriented. What we do is to benefit all the members of our family. We want them all to be happy, successful, and religiously fulfilled. And when family is defined to be the whole world, then it is clear that we wish everyone in the world to be happy, successful, and religiously fulfilled. The Vedic verse that captures this sentiment is, may all people be happy. In the second half of the 20th century, Hindu concepts became more and more popular and influential in the West. For example, every year more Westerners take up the belief in karma and reincarnation as a logical explanation of what they observe in life. Certainly one of the most visible uses of Hindu values in the West in the 20th century was Dr. Martin Luther King. After many years of giving careful thought to the problem of discriminatory laws, Dr. King selected the Hindu principle of ahimsa, as exemplified by Mahatma Gandhi's tactic of nonviolent resistance, as the most effective method for overcoming the unjust laws of racial discrimination in the United States. It is interesting to note that in 1959, Dr. King spent 5 weeks in India discussing with Gandhi's followers the philosophy and techniques of nonviolence to deepen his understanding before putting them into actual use. By the way, a line from Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech beautifully states the ideal stated earlier in this article of avoiding ethnic generalizations and instead seeing each individual for the person he or she is. To quote, I have a dream that my 4 children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Swami Chinmayananda, in his first public talk in 1951, made a powerful statement, quote, the true Hinduism is the science of perfection. There is in this true Hinduism a solution to every individual, social, national, and international problem. True Hinduism is the Sanatana Dharma of the Upanishads. Unquote. Perhaps in the 21st century, the world can again turn to the high-minded values of Hinduism, choosing this time the concept of tolerance as a way of creating a future for this planet that is free from war and terrorism. And such tolerance should not be mere passive acceptance of those who are different, but rather a heartfelt, proactive effort to befriend and help. In conclusion, each time you find yourself stating or even thinking a generalization, either positive or negative, about people based on their ethnicity, religion, or nationality, correct yourself and restate your thought, taking into account the actual qualities and character of specific individuals. Also help your children do the same. This simple practice deeply impresses the mind that in looking at or talking about individuals, rather than seeing simply a shallow stereotype, we must look more deeply and see the specific individual for whom he or she really is. In impressing the mind regularly in this way, over time our attitudes toward others will move closer and closer to the ideal of a prejudice-free consciousness.